Across all time zones, covering both hemispheres, it's time for another broadcast of Authors First on the Artists First World Radio Network. Yes, we were one of the very, very, very first companies to integrate web radio, author promotion, band promotion, web design, and the whole nine yards. We did this way back in 96, before most of you even knew there was an internet, and we still go strong. We are the big dogs. This is Artists First. We do get over 10 million listeners a month, and I'm told, at least by an article in NPR, that that's more listeners than Newsweek magazine gets. Ain't too bad for a bunch of guys like us. And tonight, this is Z-Man, obviously sitting in for the recuperating Tony K. He has the croup or something. He is flat on his back, and I am filling some big shoes tonight. However, we are going to have a nice positive show tonight because we've got a great positive type person coming on. You'll see what I'm talking about in just a moment. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest tonight. She is an author, she's an illustrator, a songwriter, she's also an actress, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. And she's brought a couple of books, actually three that I know of so far, and I think there's another one on the way. And they all have a positive message, and they're contributing to the world in a good way. And it is my pleasure to welcome M. Ann Machen Pritchard to the broadcast. Hello, Ann.
Well, hello. How are you today?
Now, I just want to, for clarity's sake, M. Ann Machen. I'm having
you got it right, Machen
Pritchard. Let me make sure I at least don't hack your name to pieces for the next hour. Welcome to the broadcast, Ann. How's things in your world today?
It's going just great, and I'm excited being on your show today. I really appreciate it.
Now, where are we reaching you tonight across the vast universe?
Minneapolis, Minnesota. Or Minnesota, as someone says.
Or Minnesota, as the Canadians say. See now, listeners, you're with me because your accent does not sound like a native Minnesotan, is it?
It is not. I'm from East Tennessee.
Yeah, I was sort of getting that drift there.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's...
I've been here now for 21 years, and everybody keeps saying that. I guess I can say you can take the country girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl.
Someone should do a study on that and see, I mean, linguistically, you know, how long does it take? Obviously, some people adapt to their surroundings rapidly. I don't know. Maybe there's a PhD thesis there. Why do some people retain their childhood language? What am I trying to say? Their accent.
That is quite interesting. Some people say I do sound Southern, and some people say I'm Minnesotan.
Well, one thing that you are, actually several things that you are, is author, illustrator, songwriter, and actress. When someone says, "Ann, what do you do?" You know, hey, what's your, you know, career and life about? What's your answer to them?
I'll just say I'm an author, illustrator, songwriter, and actress. And that way they can know I have tons and tons and tons of things I do, not just one. I'm quite talented, I've been told.
Well, and I think there's a lot of people tuning in tonight that would love to have any one of those skills. And there's probably people tuning in tonight, Ann, that have never heard of you before. I'm sure there are people that have. But for the benefit of those who are hearing about you for the first time, let's go way back and talk about your childhood. Now, you said you've lived in Minneapolis for some time, but, you know, where did you grow up and what was your childhood like?
I grew up in a small town of Elizabethan, Tennessee. And hi, you guys down home. I just want to say hi so you can see I'm still country. I love the city. It's very, very beautiful there. We have the rhododendron gardens. I'm sure you've heard of those, the giant rhododendron flowers. They're beautiful. That's up in Rome Mountain. And even though it's a small town, we've had several movies filmed there also. One of Chuck Norris's films, Delta Force 2, Stranglehold, was some of those scenes were filmed there. So I was excited about that. And I know Burt Reynolds had come and purchased some horses because we have like the Tennessee Walker horses and several great horses there. I love horses, but I've never ridden one. Can you believe that?
You're from Tennessee and you've never ridden a horse?
Yeah, I've never ridden a horse.
Go to the fair or something.
I know, but now I'm kind of afraid of them because I'm so short and they're so huge, especially the one of my favorites, though, is the Clydesdales. You know, I love those, the giant Clydesdale horses.
They're giant.
They're so beautiful. But I'm not barely 5 feet tall, you know, so I would have to probably have 10 ladders to get up on one.
Yeah. What's red and gushy and under Clydesdale's hooves? Slow-running authors.
I guess. But I grew up in a large family, though, of 16 children. There was 7 girls and 9 boys. That was very interesting. And my father was the late Reverend M. David Machen. I know several people down in the southern states know him quite well.
Wait, before you have 15 brothers and sisters?
Yes.
Wow.
Big family. Went through a lot of experiences. You know, I'm not afraid to say it. I know what it's like to be a child that didn't have food at night sometime when they went to bed, and I know what it's like to have a child that did have lots of food. It just depends on where it was, you know, how many kids were there at the time, I guess.
Wow, that's an experience all in itself. I bet very few people grow up in households with 16 siblings.
I don't see how my mom did it. She was a great woman, and I just have 2 kids myself, and I just said, oh, my goodness, how could my mom really put up with all of us? Especially me, because I'm a middle child, you know, right
in the
middle. And they say, you know, we need a lot of attention.
Is that the case? How well? So did you get the attention you needed as a child?
In some ways, what I did, me and a couple of my sisters, we were all best friends. We'd make up our own little paper dolls, very creative. And we just had the funnest time, and we just made our own attention. Because I know, you know, our mom and dad couldn't, like, hug us all at one time, or, you know, one's crying and then the other one needs something and this and that. So me being in the middle, I was kind of like a mother, too, you know, taking care of the siblings underneath me. Because remember, it's 8 underneath me. That's quite a bit.
I'm a single parent. I raised my son alone. He's now 27 and grown up and doing just fine. And it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life is raise one child. I can't imagine having 16. Wow, that is. And, you know, I guess your life had obviously profoundly influenced by the fact that you have 15 brothers and sisters and living in that situation. You know, what you just said about your sisters and having friends, I mean, you always have friends, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you're not like there are some children that are only childs or can be lonely because they don't have anybody else around except their parent or parents. So that must have helped in a creative way where with so many brothers and sisters, you know, no parent could provide everything they need. You know, there's mm-hmm. some spoiled kids that have everything they can imagine. And with larger families, often, you know, you're the hand-me-downs, you're the make-do and the
And learn how to work, too.
And exactly. But don't you think that has benefited you in your life?
Oh, definitely. That way I have more compassion for all kinds of, you know, different cultures. And even when I see a child when I was in school, you know, if they were kind of like, staying to the corner and they were kind of shy, then I'd always want to try to make friends with them because I know what it would be like, you know, not to have a friend around. You know, you learn a lot about love and compassion and supporting not only yourself and your family, but you have love for the whole world, actually. You know, I think that's really important. And one thing we did learn, too, is about music, because our father was a Baptist minister, so he always had his own choir. So we sung to about several churches all around, like 5 states in the southern communities, and we even were on like radio and TV shows even at age 6 on up.
Wow.
That wasn't very much fun at first because you have to get up 3 o'clock in the morning sometime and drive in a hot car with no air conditioner for hours. You know, you're tired, but now that we're all older, sometimes we think about maybe we should get our group back together sometime and sing together again. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be you know, because I'm also been a professional musician for over more years than I want to say on the radio. It's something that's like riding a bike. It comes back right now. You never lose it. You know, I mean, I think that would be spectacular for you guys to get back together and do that again. But so what age were you when you thought, hey, you know what? I've got some creative skills. I could be an author. I could be an illustrator. I can write songs. When did you realize you had these skills?
Well, I've been writing since I was 12 years old, just a young child. And I was had this old beat-up guitar I bought for like a dollar and a half. Can you believe it or not?
Wow.
And I would just start playing like on top of Old Smokey and, you know, some of those kids' school songs. And then I started writing my own. And I sent a lot of them around. By the time I was 16, I started sending them out to, like, different places, different producers. And sometimes they'd come back and not be even looked at, and I'd get kind of sad. But my dad always told me, he says, daughter, of course, we had so many daughters, you know, he'd call us daughters and not by our name, which I really laugh about every day now. But he would say, daughter, if you want to get published, you've got to figure out a way to publish yourself. But, you know, with my life and, you know, raising kids and going through so many trials and tribulations through my life myself, I didn't really get anything published till age 50. See, now you're letting me say my age. I didn't write my first book till I was 50 because I said, wow, my life just flew by. You know, my life is half over. And you know, I always wanted to become a published author. I always wanted to write my own songs and really help people to listen to the messages they have. And I said, how can I do this? And I just started going to the library, and I want to say hi to all the ladies at the Hennepin County Library in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I didn't even know how to, you know, even copy and paste anything or do anything with the computer, so they taught me all that. And next thing they knew, I started having books come out, and they say, who's this lady now? She comes here, and we help her learn about how to use a computer, and here she's got published books already. You know, they thought that was amazing, and so I just decided, you know, you're never too old. You know, everyone, if you have a love and passion, compassion for something, don't give up, and don't ever say it's too late. You know, because if I can do it at 50, anybody can do it at any age. I'm really proud that I decided to just follow my dream, because I didn't think I would be happy the rest of my life if I didn't really follow my dream. And I would like to say to everyone out there, if you have a dream or a love and compassion for something in your life, don't just say, you know, you just give up and, oh, I never did get to do what I wanted to, or if I did this or should have done that, that kind of thing. Don't worry about that. Just go on and do it.
Because there are some things that you can't, you do have control over. You know, I'm in my 50s, and you know what? I'll never be president of the United States. That's a fact of life, no matter how hard I want to be, which I don't at all, but I'm just using that as an example. But, you know, if I felt like I wanted to paint a painting or write a book or do a sculpture, I've got two hands and some eyes. I can, you know, pick up a pen or a piano. And, you know, I think it's very valuable for people to do the things that are important in their life. Oh yeah, I'm a big stockbroker. I made $1 million. Well, I mean, that would be great. God bless you for making that money. But, you know, there is something to be said about a fulfilling life. It's not all just about money and cars and what we see on TV. There is something very deeply personal about being an artist and bringing to life something from your own creation.
And what I want to say about my own creation, something tragic actually had to happen for me to get, like they say, you have to get the little light bulb in your head to give you a message that you need to do something, because I have a really strong love and compassion for people of all walks of life. And what really gets to me is so many are getting addicted to drugs and alcohol, and then I've had lost, you know, friends from like school and some relatives and, you know, people really close to me and close to my heart. And I just said one night, I just said, oh, they keep dying and getting injured, brain injury and all kinds of things happening because of this drug and alcohol. And it's just taking over the whole world, I thought. And I said, somebody has to do something. You know, why can't somebody do something? I just said, I better look at myself. what can I do? You know, and I started drawing these little cartoons. They were kind of like little stick men at first. And you can laugh if you want, that's fine. They were like little stick men, and I thought, I should do something for like little kids and, you know, have it like in a fun cartoon where they would look at it, and even if they couldn't read, you know, they can ask their mommy, you know, what's this about? You know, because I believe in teaching kids things at an early age, so, and when they get older, they won't have to get into drugs and alcohol and the bullying and the crimes and all that. So what I did at first, I did the cartoon about anti-drugs and alcohol. It's a cartoon character called Phil the Pill and Friends. And then I did, like, T-shirts, and one of the T-shirts says, "Drugs are used for medicine to heal. Please don't abuse or they will kill." And I consulted with several teachers in schools, and I said, I don't know if I want to put this, like, grave. I had, like, a tombstone and have a couple of the cartoons by it, and they kind of look sad. And I said, I don't know if I want to put that tombstone there because I didn't want to, like, shock the kids and to something. But they told me that was an important thing to put that on there because especially if they couldn't read, they need to know what that's about. And for a while there, you know, everybody was saying, oh, you know, a lot of things with the drugs and alcohol these days, people just keep doing it and it's nothing that's really working. And I don't know if you agree with that, that nothing works, but I know what does work if you can get help for like at least 6 months to a year or a year and a half. There are some facilities out there like SoberCorps is one, and Rebuild Resources that I wish a lot of people all over the country would get to know who they are, because they've helped several people really get their lives back together. But what I decided to do beyond that, because it was just taking, everything is going too slow for me, you know. I have to speed things up a little bit. So I just thought about, since I always wanted to become an author, maybe I should teach kids the importance of staying in school. You don't be late. You graduate. Teach them that going to school is really cool. You know, learn how to read. Learn those positive communication skills while you're young. So that can help you have higher self-esteem as you grow up. And when you get that education, that's the key to our life, to me, that you can grow up and be whatever you want to be. I've written songs and several positive stories, like when if they're in a bad mood, like Grumpy Dan. I don't know if you have the book there, but I love the story about Dan Talks It Out.
I certainly do have the book here.
He has a bad attitude, and I'm sure everybody gets a bad attitude sometime. You're just having a bad day, and you just don't want to talk to people, and you kind of just bottle everything up inside you. You know what happens when little kids bottle things up inside? They carry it for the rest of their lives. And I think that's one reason why there's a lot of the negative things that come about through life is, you know, if you keep seeing, you know, something that's eating you up, that's worrying you or making you sad, and you don't get the speak out to anyone or trust anybody, you know, to share it with, to see if they can help you, you know, get the resources you need, then I think that's when it kind of grows inside you, as they say, and then you'll get into, like, bullying and the drugs and alcohol, the gangs and all the abuses of the world. So when I wrote my first book, Fill the Pill and Friends, Making Positive Choices, what I'm attempting to do is teach kids at a young age, from even 2 years old on up, the importance that they are somebody, always believe in themselves that they are somebody, they're just as good as anybody else. But if they do have any kind of issues or problems or things that's, you know, giving them torment in their life, you know, they need to, you know, go to someone that they can trust and, you know, talk it out, get it out by the age of even two. You know, you have the little kids are 2, 3, and everybody says, oh, they just have a temper tantrum. That's just their terrible twos. And some parents will just put the child in a corner and just say, you're going to have to stay there. Some parents will even spank their kids and put them in a corner. But what I would like to teach parents of the world to do is, if that child is in a bad mood like that and they're angry, they're stomping their feet, you know how they go, scream, yelling, or whatever, you take them in your loving arms and give them a hug and try to find out from them what's making them feel so bad and angry. Because at 2 years old, they can be angry too, and they do have a way that they can communicate with you to let you know that they're sad about something, and you can talk to them. I think that would teach them positive communication skills, how to get things out and get resolve of it in a positive way instead of being negative. Because when you carry it all through the years, it's just going to eat up and eat up, and that's why you have the shootings in the schools and all the bullying. I don't know if you agree or not, but
I'm trying to attempt,
and I'm making the books fun for the kids to read, and it's not just like Phil the Pill and Friends. It's not only a children's book. It has 4 short stories and 5 songs, even with the sheet music. Fun songs teaching the kids that, you know, the high self-esteem where they can just get their education and be whatever they want to be when they grow up. And if you like, I'd like to sing one of the songs from that book.
Absolutely. And folks, I'm looking right at it. There is sheet music in the book. This is a cool combination. What are we going to hear?
I'm going to sing I'm Sweet and Neat with 2 Little Feet. It's in the back of the book. It's kind of long, but I'm going to shorten it.
Yeah, I got
a
right
shortened version for you.
I'm looking right at it.
I'm sweet and neat with 2 little feet. I run and play and grow up someday. When I grow up, you will see. I'll be whatever I want to be. I'll be whatever I want to be. I'll be a ballerina or the mayor of Pasadena. I'll be whatever I want to be. I'll be a nurse or I'll sing another verse. I'll be whatever I want to be. I'll be whatever I want to be. And then what made me really get so happy is one of my grandsons. His name is Mark. Hi, Mark. He got mad at me at age 4 saying that he was just so mad. And this is what I'm saying, you know, the communication. He says, you forgot about me. Wrote that book and just forgot all about your grandson. I said, no, Mark, there's just so many things that you have to put in there, but the kids can make up their own. And he said, I wanted the Silva engineer in there. I said, you know, you can add it. I'm sweet and neat with 2 little feet. I run and play and grow up someday. When I grow up, you will hear. I'll be a Silva engineer. I'll be a Silva engineer. And then he got so happy, he says, well, Grandmommy, I love you now. It's really a fun book, you know, with the little short stories, and it's teaching them positive things. Like Phil goes in there, too, with Grumpy Dan. He's just having a bad day, and they're asking what's making him so sad today. And he just says, oh, leave me alone. Who cares? Who wants to know? Nobody cares about me. He just has a really bad attitude. But at the end of the day, he learns that if he just comes down and he actually talks about what's making him mad or sad, maybe he can get, you know, some resources from like a teacher or a preacher or his parents or somebody that can help him and help him understand that he can resolve it. You know, it's not the end of the world just because your day is going bad. There's ways that you can get through it. And when you have a communication with your parents or, you know, a really good close friend or some relative, someone that can listen to you, that you trust, I think the whole world would be a better place.
Amen, sister. I hate to sound negative, and folks, you can send me hate mail all you want, but anybody can replicate. Even, you know, any dumb animal can breed, mm-hmm. but not everybody should breed. And a whole bunch of people who have brought children into this world are disgraceful failures as parents. I better stop there before I get our station in trouble. A lot of these kids are so disadvantaged because their parents are idiots. They don't pay any attention to them. They're more interested in crack or their next boyfriend or girlfriend and or job promotion. And some of these kids grow up in unimaginable circumstances. My father's been a school teacher for 50 years, and to see the disgraceful condition of some of these kids that come to school, you know, those of us that are living in a middle-class world, we have no idea what these kids start with or don't start with. And for someone like you or anyone else, teachers who actually care and try to make a difference on a child, you know, the best and simplest rehabilitation for someone that's on drugs is to never start to be on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to go to AAA if you never took up drinking. And I bravo for what you do at the most impressionable age, when you can still reach some of these kids and they can still be taught the right values in life, not what they see with their crack addict or methamphetamine parents at home or alcoholic abusive, et cetera, et cetera. I wish there was a better way to force parents to do the right thing, which far, far too often, at least in my humble opinion, doesn't happen. I'm sorry, I'm starting to preach here, and I don't mean to.
Preach it, brother.
Well, I mean, and this is exactly what you're doing with Fill the Pill and then Val's World, and everything else you're doing is designed to give a positive message. And let's face it, some of these kids, in many of these school districts, they got nobody to look up to. Mm-hmm. Daddy's been gone since, well, forever. Mama's trying to do her best, but she's only doing what she can. And, you know, where does the positive reinforcement, where does the good news come from? It comes from the teachers at the school.
Mm-hmm. And that's one reason, too, why my second book, Val's World, featuring the Family Unity Roundtable. You notice that word, Family Unity Roundtable. Even though it's a children's book, it's still focused on the importance of the school because the kids need the love, the support, and the trust of their family members to help them get the good education they need and give them the tools they need to have a good life. Especially like you're saying, the parents need to be involved big time. So when I wrote that book, it was talking about, you know, the teacher comes in the school and he's trying to get the kids involved with, you know, new little school slogans. And one of them says, you know, like, take your time, stay calm, things will be just fine, you know, because everybody's just going in a rush right now and rush here and rush there. And, of course, I know some people's got two or three jobs and they don't have time to really say hardly hi or bye to their kids. But what's important, that child needs you, and they need the whole community. We need to get back to it takes a village to raise a child, because I know I was a single parent myself for a while, you know, after I got divorced, so I know how rough it can be. And I just had two kids, and there's some girls, ladies that has five kids, six kids, eight kids I've seen. And then they don't have the time, or some of them they'll say, I just can't take the time. But what everybody's not realizing, even if you spend like 5-10 minutes a day just to give your child a hug, tell them that they are somebody and that they are special, that's what they need. And I'm sorry, I'm going to get emotional. It's really close to my heart that parents should be involved with their kids. And when they have those little school plays or the school assemblies or the parent-teacher conferences, parents, please go there and support your child. And in the back of that book, I even have recipes, because I have to make the books kind of interactive, you know, fun for people to be interested. I've got even recipes in the back, so everybody has to eat, right? Even if you don't have time, you say, to talk to your child or your loved one there, everybody has to eat. Like if you got a 2-year-old little boy or girl there and say you're making mashed potatoes for tonight and gravy and stuff, all this fattening stuff I like, you know, that child, they're not able to help you really cook that meal, but they can do something to feel like they're important and involved with it. Like say if you're having the basket of potatoes there, have your little 2- or 3-year-old kid pick up the potato for you and hand it to you. That makes them feel special. You don't know how important that is, because I've talked to tons of kids all across the country, and they always say the same thing. I wish my mom or I wish my dad would be able to really talk to me, even though I might be mad and I'm, you know, having my tantrum, but I want them to still be there for me. Even though I might say, oh, I'm not listening, really I am listening, tons of kids tell me that. So they need you to be there for them. Please, I'm begging the world for all parents to be there for their children, especially as they're going to get their education. Because, like, I know I'm hope it's not too, I hope I can mention it, students first. Students are what comes first here, you know, when it comes down to the education. Doesn't matter about how much money somebody makes or doesn't make, you know, all children should have the best education possible, no matter what kind of family, you know, lifestyle they have or anything. All children should have that great opportunity. And me personally, in my own life, if I hadn't have been there for one of my kids in their school system, one of my children would have never even graduated because the school tried to say they needed like 4 or 5 extra credits to graduate when I knew my child had enough to graduate. I didn't even know that we were going to have a graduation celebration till the day, you know, the morning of the graduation when I went to pick up the cap and gown.
Wow.
So my child's name was not even in the program book, and I had to sit alone to watch the ceremony, and that wasn't very happy for, I mean, I was proud of my child, but I was so sad because I said, I don't even have a book to for memorabilia, you know, to look back on, you know, when I'm old and gray that, you know, my child graduate from high school. I was just thinking back of all some, you know, all the other parents out there. If you're not involved with your child, maybe your child did also have enough credits to graduate, but then they just dropped out because they said, you know, nobody cares. Because I think, especially in the African-American community, there's way, way too many children, especially the males, not graduating. And I think one big reason, too, is because the parents are not involved enough. I know we're all working, we're all busy, but we've got to take time out for our children. So I'm begging everyone, take time out for your child. Even if you just have 5 or 10 minutes a day or 5 or 10 minutes a week, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a month, everybody should have a family unity round table, even if it's just at the dinner table and no other time but that. You take that time and eat together and pray together, and let's get back to families like we had back when our parents were our, you know, when we had families back in the day, as they say, because this world is really getting so corrupt with all the drugs, the alcohol, the gangs, the bullying, and, you know, all kinds of corruption. I want to see this world go back into peace and harmony as much as possible. I know the whole world will never be at peace and harmony because we've had wars and everything since the beginning of time. But our children are our future, and we need to be there for them. And our parents and teachers should work together with the children. And even in the schools, we should have like a time every morning, or, you know, once a week, maybe, to have all the students in the, they have all the, you know, different small classrooms, you know, get together in your classes and have a, like, a round table at the school. And because, see, some, like you were saying too, like, some of the kids, they're going through so much turmoil in their life at home. School and church might be even the place that they can find peace and, you know, get their lives turned around, so it won't have this cycle keep going over and over again with all the negative stuff in the world. So I'm just begging all the parents, be there for your child, because you don't know what's going on in that child's life if you're not talking to them. Like, it's so sad for me. I hate to keep preaching. I'm preaching now.
You go, girl.
But I get so emotional because I know of some kids that actually committed suicide because they didn't have the support that they really needed. And if we don't start talking to our kids, like I said, even though they're, you know, they get angry and they might just kind of like blow you off, but they're really not blowing you off because they tell me, oh, you know, my parents said this or that. You know, I'm listening, but sometimes I just want to push them a little bit. You know, it's like a power struggle. They want to see if they can control you or not, or if you can control them, but we don't really want to use that that word, I guess, control, because we don't want to control anybody, but we want to actually come in harmony and communicate with each other so the world can be a better place. Because I think, too, when you talk to your kids, especially when you're thinking about, oh, if your kid's going to go to college and, you know, be this or that, a lot of people, they say, oh, they want their daughter or son to be a doctor or a lawyer or some big movie star and make all this money, you know, so they can take care of them, you know, the parents at their old age.
What we
should teach the kids is find out what they want to be themselves, not what we want them to be. Talk to your kids. You'll be surprised that they might want to be this or that. Maybe one might want to be an engineer. You know, one might want to just be a clown, you know, a professional clown or something. Let the kids be what they want to be. And you work with the teachers as much as you can to give the kids the tools they need so they can get to that place, what they want to be. Like, you know, a lot of boys, I'm sure they always say they want to be a Michael Jordan or this or that. And, you know, in reality, everybody can't be a basketball player or a sports player. But they could be a coach. You know, if they like sports still, you know, let them understand you could even be a coach. Like, I talked to several little girls, and a couple of them said they wanted to be a gymnast in the Olympics. But she's way past the age already that she should have started. But I still encouraged her, well, if you don't make it to the Olympics, or what's your plan B? You should always have a plan B. And I told her, I said, have you ever thought of being a gymnast teacher at a school or a college, or have your own studio? That would even be great. And she just started smiling from ear to ear. She said, I never thought of that. But then she says, well, my mom wants me this, or my dad wants me to be this, but I want to be a gymnast. And I said, if you go to school and get the education, you talk to the counselors and the teachers and your parents and see what tools you need that they can help you with to get to what you want to do and what you want to be. Because I think the world would be a better place if each and every child can grow up and be what they want to be, but have the tools at a young age so they can start, you know, even in kindergarten age, preschool age, developing the skills they would need. Because, like, I know we all take English and math and this and that in the schools because that's what, you know, the curriculum is. But if we could change the schools around a little bit, still have your regular curriculums and things like that, but have studies in there that the kids need for actually life skills, you know, what they want to be doing when they graduate and go to college and actually have a life.
Well, it's a lot easier to get ahead in life if you can read, if mm-hmm. you can do simple math, if you understand a little bit about history and politics and home economics, you can balance a checkbook, you know, and one of the things that maybe a child would want to be is a child that has a couple of caring parents at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to come down on a certain population of our society where, especially in the urban communities where so many of these young men are throwing their lives away, committed to spend the rest of the eternity in prison, never to see their kids, never to have an influence on their kids. And just the other extreme. Okay, what about the hedge fund manager and the Wall Street broker whose home may be 18 hours a week? You know, he has got a couple hours to spend with his kid. You know, they're both, in my book, in the same category. They're mm-hmm. both disgraceful for not spending the necessary time. You know, some people struggle their whole adult lives and try every way imaginable to even have children.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people out there that just, well, they just have children because that's what they do, because they can't control their urges and they refuse to use birth control. And, oh, I got another baby. Well, it's just like, hey, I got another TV. That's a person. That's a life. And they deserve better than just, oh, that was a mother mistake. Oh, dang it, I should have taken that pill that day. You know, and I just think that our society, and I hate to sound so pessimistic, but if you look at the history of our country, we have gone downhill ever since, as you said earlier, Anne, the family unit has mm-hmm. slowly disintegrated in American society. And, boy, that's a whole another program. And I'm sorry, folks, I haven't said this since in quite a while, but you are listening to Authors First. Our author tonight is M. Ann Machen Pritchard. She has several books out. Fill the Pill is one, Val's World is another, and she's got a couple of websites we can check out. The one listed on the homepage is cafepress.com/M.Ann.Pritchard. You can surf over there and see. You even we used to call them plush toys or stuffed animals, but they're not. You have a stuffed Fill the Pill.
Yes, I do.
That's pretty cool.
But my website is www.cafepress.com/mampcreations. That's M-A-M-P Creations.
Thank you for correcting me. I was giving out your Facebook address, wasn't I?
Yes, that was Facebook. So, but you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, StumbleUpon, LinkedIn. I'm all over the web. MySpace.
Well, just for clarity, the Facebook was the address. I confused the two. I'm doing this from memory, folks. And as you guys know, memory ain't as good as it used to was. The Facebook page is facebook.com/m.ann.pritchard. Right?
They got that? And then I have a Facebook/Mamp Creations fan page. And I also have a Facebook M. Ann Machen Pritchard fan page. I have three, actually.
Well, Ann,
so join me, please.
I want to congratulate you for contributing in any way to the development of even a single child. And obviously, you will have reached... by the time you're at the end of your road, you will have reached a heck of a lot of children and hopefully set some paths straight with kids and the adults, hopefully. Sometimes the best teachers for adults can be children. And I just want to say publicly thank you for being the type of person and caring about these vital issues for our society and caring about and being a Christian woman and looking out for the less fortunate of our society. Bravo.
Well, thank you very much. And if I have enough time, I'd like to talk about my acting career a little bit, too.
Yes, we do. We've got about 9 minutes left, so
okay.
Wherever you want to go. Is this the... that's right. You tell them about the movie.
Yeah, I'm one of the actors in Minneapolis, the movie. We just released the test trailer a few days ago. And if you'd like to view it, you can go to Minneapolis, the movie. Movie fan page on facebook.com. We could visit www.minneapolisthemovie. You can find it there, and it's on my web pages, of course, through Facebook and Twitter and all around.
Well, what's it about?
Well, it's about two news anchors, and they have kind of like a love-hate-love relationship, you know, one or the others, you know, robbing over the other, and then I'm one of the most important stars in it is Christine Clayburgh of Clayburgh Creative Group. You can actually contact her at Clayburgh Creative Group, and she could tell you even more about it. But my grandsons were really shocked and crying and calling me, and they said, "Grandma, did you change?" And I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "Well, you had a cigarette in your hand, you're smoking, and you're getting all mean." I was mean to Christine, and I guess I'll still be mean to her just in the movie, because I'm not like that. But it's a fun movie, and it shows things about, you know, the Skyway system in Minneapolis and, you know, the relationship between these two anchors. And she gets in a little bit of trouble because she couldn't even pronounce the station right because... she said, "We'll be back at Walleye. So whatever you do, don't say walleye." It was really funny because, you know, walleye is one of the state fishes for Minneapolis, Minnesota, you know, in the state of Minnesota. It's really a lot of fun. And what we're doing to we've released the trailer for right now, but we are looking for investors, if it's okay for me to mention it. If
Certainly.
There are any investors out there that would like to invest in Minneapolis, the movie, to do the full version of it, that would be so great. You would just contact Christine Clayburgh at Creative Clayburgh Creative Group, or just find her on Minneapolis the Movie fan page on Facebook. That would be so great.
You know, in the last 10 years, last 15 years, there have been cataclysmic changes in the book publishing business, mm-hmm. the music record producing business, and now, and lastly, the movie business. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got college kids with enough gear on their in their dorm room to put out a Blair Witch Project. What I'm trying to say is technology has leapt ahead so fast that the average person can now put out cinema quality. You know, you can rent a video camera by the month that can do cinema quality. These new Sony cameras, I mean, I think they run about $25,000, so you can lease one for any. What I'm saying is, I bet there are bajillions of young movie producers out there, young people that would like to get into the business who, you know, in decades past had no hope whatsoever because of all the limitations, the cost of the equipment, the cost of producing a movie, the cost of distributing, mm-hmm. distributing, rather, the product. And now you can put it on iTunes, you can put it on all these different websites, and you don't need the big production contract and the big distribution contract, and you can also keep the money because you can sell it yourself over the internet. It's changed radically. So if there's anybody out there that fits that category, again, the website is www.minneapolisthemovie.com, and get in touch with somebody. You might be surprised, Ann. You might get a few inquiries about that.
Well, that would be great.
Well, Ann, you've also got a book coming out this fall called The Spirit of 16. What's that about?
That's correct. It's a faith-based story, and it's based on a true story about a young lady that she's from down south in Kentucky. I'll say the state now, down in Kentucky, and she goes through several different trials and tribulations throughout her life, and but she decides to get away from, I'm a Christian, I believe in Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, and she just got into a different kind of world away from the Lord, and so all these tragic things happens to her, and then she learns the hard way that she needs to get back to Christ, because then her whole life would totally change. And I can't tell you the whole story, but, I mean, it's an awesome book, and I hope it's going to influence and really touch everybody's life all around the world. And maybe, you know, it can make people be more compassionate with each other and love each other and try to help each other as a community. Because, you know, like now, a lot of the neighbors, they don't even know the neighbors. You know, I have, like, several. I live in a you know, like in patio homes with the pools and all that, and I see so many of my neighbors. I'm always talking to them, and I'm one of those parents that's like the, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, because I even saw some kids not long ago that they were like rocking in a car, and I thought, oh, is there an adult in there, or is this kid's, you know, got in someone's car? I didn't know what to think, but I was brave enough. I went, and I said, is there an adult in this car? And they said, no, and I said, do you own this car? I mean, I'm just a brave person. I get out in the community. And, you know, at the end of the day, I finally got the kids to get out of the car, and I told them true stories about what could happen. You know, you're playing in that car, you know, the gear can get out of gear. It could start rolling down the hill. You know, I said, maybe I could be walking through here, and it rolls down the hill and hits me. You know, what would that make you feel like? So you have to kind of talk to kids and give them a vision of different scenarios. And at the end of the day, they really started talking to me, and they said, well, they didn't have anything else to do and thought it was fun, but they didn't know it was dangerous. You know, we as parents need to get out in the community. If you see anything that the kids are doing that's not appropriate, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, be cautious, though, and, you know, approach them and just see what's going on, if it's something that maybe they need help with. Like, they just needed somebody to talk to them, actually. That's why we go back to, the parents need to be involved with the children, because I got to talk with them quite a bit about school and what they're doing in school and how they can get certain kind of classes, you know, that they need for the kind of jobs they might want to pursue, like for the summer, that kind of thing.
Well, Ann, you're You're one of the good ones. We need a few more people in the world, folks, like Ann Pritchard. I think the world would be a much better place. And thank you for caring. You know, a lot of people, they just, you know, close the blind, turn up the TV, and they don't care if as long as it's not directly affecting them. And it takes people like you out there who actually is trying to have a make an impact in the world, make a difference to some faceless person you will never know. There will no doubt be children and hopefully parents that you influence with these books. Their lives will be better, and you'll never know. You will never meet them. Maybe you will. Most authors don't. But, you know, I think that has to be an enormously satisfying feeling.
You know, if I could help just even one child, because, you know, our children are our future. If we don't save our kids, you know, we won't even have a future. We just have to start when they're just little babies there, you know, read to them and read them positive things and teach them positive things and teach them how to, you know, like I said back with the two-year-olds, having the tantrums. You take them in your arms and you love them and give them a big hug and just try to let them kick you if you have to, because I know I've had kids, they'd kick me. I have bruises on my legs even, but I just held them and told them that I do love them and I do care what they feel inside. Like, I have to mention this if I have time, is like when I first decided to do the Val's World featuring the Family Unity Roundtable, I had lunch, you know, with a couple of young ladies that's relatives of mine, but I just won't say their name, but they're relatives of mine. And I said, well, after lunch, let's just play a game. And I called it, you know, the Feel the Pill Roundtable, because that's like my blog. And I said, we just want to talk after dinner and just see what's going on with you. You know, just what are you feeling right now, is what I said. And the one child, she just started crying. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. She started crying, and she said she felt that no one loved her. She said her mom was so busy with work. Her dad, she hadn't seen him for years, so she just felt like nobody cared at all.
And you know what? Maybe no one did care.
And I that just touched my heart, and I said, oh, my goodness, this is not a game. This is really something serious. So I decided I better, you know, write a book or do something to try to incorporate the families. We need to get back to families again. If all we can do is eat dinner together, let's eat dinner together, but let's talk and communicate. See what's going on in your child's life. See how you can help them have a better life. Just like that's one reason why, like you were saying, like the parents are doing this or that. I think it's because when they're children themselves, they didn't get the love and the support that they needed. So then, like I said, you know, things just bottle up inside for all your life. And then you don't know how to deal with it, and then you get into the negative things to try to pacify yourself to not feel the hurt and the pain that you suffered in your younger days. But see, if we start with, you know, working with the kids while they're young, and then hopefully this world will be a better place. I that's a really strong passion that I have, because I've seen too much.
Well, lead
in
on,
my life.
And we need more folks like you. Thank you for caring and writing these books, folks. Our guest tonight has been M. Ann Machen Pritchard. Her books are Val's World, Fill the Pill, and she has a new one coming out. If you're listening to an archive, it might already be out, The Spirit of 16. Also check out MinneapolisTheMovie.com. And we're just out of time. Please come back and visit us after the movie's done, and let's hear about that. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Thank you much. And my website is cafepress.com/mampcreation. See you then.
Thank you. And this is Z-Man signing off. The CBS News starts in about 10 seconds. You're listening to Artists First World Radio.